and welcome to the inaugural episode of Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast. We're not just another gaming podcast. We're a group of three women who are also academics, all who are currently living in the great state of Indiana, living and working in the great state of Indiana. And we've come together to talk about issues in gaming and games in general, in ways that we have not seen in other podcasts online. Not to say that they don't exist, but say we haven't seen them. So what we'd like to do now is to start by introducing ourselves. I'll go last, since I'm the one who's talking first. And let's start with, how about you, Alex?
All right. My name is Alex Lane. I am a second-year PhD student at Purdue, and I pretty much spent all of my free time playing video games. That's pretty much it. I don't know what else to say.
That says it all. Okay, well then, I'm Sarah White. I teach composition and creative writing at Purdue North Central, so I am up to the north. I play video games, maybe not as much as the other two, but I was fortunate enough to write a couple of articles with one of my friends about video game analysis, focusing on Resident Evil and Silent Hill, so I'm very interested in the games and their effect on our psychology, our culture, and, of course, issues in terms of gender and such. So, yes, that's me.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, I'm Samantha Blackman. I am an associate professor at Purdue in West Lafayette, Indiana. excuse me. Digital rhetorics is one of my main areas of study, and I'm really interested in new media studies and video game studies. So that's how I know these two great young women who at one point or another are either currently or have been graduate students on main campus that I've worked with. I have been a gamer for a really long time now. I was thinking about that the other day, and I was like, oh yeah, for a while I could say I've been a gamer for 20 years. No, and I'm like, God, no, I've been a gamer for 30 years. So I've been gaming for 30 years, and then I guess recently I found a way to turn my passion into my research. That's where we are. That's who I am. That's who we all are. So what we want to start by doing tonight is to talk about lots of different things, help you get to know us better, talk about what we're playing, what we're reading, talk about things that interest us, things that we think are important in the area of games, game study, or just games in general. So let's start out with what we're playing. What are you guys playing now?
Well, this week, I have spent almost all of my time playing Civ 5. I am so addicted to the achievements in Steam. I don't know if you guys follow me on Steam, but I have a lot of achievements that I'm quite proud of. So I've been starting games with as many different rulers that I can and kind of exploring around and doing lots of wacky stuff in the game that sometimes has nothing to do with the gameplay. If you are, the leader of England, you have to make a giant fleet of ships or something like that, right? So doing lots of funny stuff like that and sort of thinking about culturally what some of the achievement means, what they mean. For example, there's like a kamikaze attack where you have to go as if you're the Japanese people, you go and fight with an injured battalion or something like that, or all these other interesting sort of cultural things that are happening with that. So that's what I've been doing.
Well, I have been playing Red Dead Redemption, and also I started last week teaching a video game. It's called Gaming, Writing, and Culture, and it's interestingly enough, I have 11 guys and 4 girls in the class, and they have been enjoying my antics where I shot someone in the back, and I've been fighting my darker demons, because I want to be a good, you know, a good outlaw, if that's such a thing. And just sort of playing through, looking at the role of women, of course, looking at the way history is being represented and other cultures. I know that I haven't quite gotten into Native American culture, but I believe that is further in the game. And so what I've been focused on this week in a lot of ways is like looking at the histrionics, can I say that, of video games and how the, I don't want to say decidedly male necessarily, but we were looking at the origins of video games in my class, going back to their militaristic beginnings and what bearing that might have on the way games have developed, maybe in terms of violence and audience. So, that's where my mind has been this week. I don't know about Samantha.
Well, I want to go back and talk a little bit about Red Dead Redemption. I know I'm cheating here. I got to do it. It's all part of the game, right? So, yeah, mm-hmm. I've played Red Dead Redemption. I'm not playing it now. I did play it for a very brief period of time, I'll say. I'll tell you why. So Rockstar's infamous, you know, and I've played the Grand Theft Autos since I can remember, since the first one. Nothing much shocks me about Rockstar, but for some strange reason, Red Dead just hit me in a way that none of the Grand Theft Autos did. I mean, none of the beating up, killing hookers, running folks over, none of that struck me in the same way that this game did, simply because I was playing the game and it was fun. I'm not gonna hold you up. I had fun playing the game, but when I was actually in the city and going around and leaving the sheriff's office, and I told Alex about this the day after it happened. Mm-hmm. I was like, I had to stop playing because I was just nauseated. I hear this voice that, like, it's coming from, like, of course, around the corner, or coming from my side speaker, that goes, you know, shut up, bitch, before I cut you a new hole. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And I hear this woman screaming. So then me, as John Marston, is running around on the screen trying to find this woman who's screaming. And I run around the corner, and in front of the saloon, lo and behold, there's a man getting up off of a prone woman on the ground who kicks her body and walks away. And as I run past, I find this battered and bloody, at this point, corpse laying on the ground, and I'm horrified. Not only am I horrified by this fact, but I'm also horrified that as I run by this corpse and try to run after this guy who's gone now, so it's too late, of course, but John Marston inadvertently kicks the body and the body moves. So, it just kind of brought me way into the game in a way that I didn't want to be brought into, because it actually felt like I was the one that was committing this violence against this woman. Mm-hmm. Not that I had killed her, but I had inadvertently kind of kicked her. And I couldn't play it anymore. I could not bring myself to play the game anymore. I mean, I've had visceral reactions to games before, but never in this way, and never to the point that I could not play again. Red Dead has, you know, I understand it was like everybody's game of the year. Everybody thought it was the greatest game ever. And it just didn't do it for me. I hated it.
I have to say, I myself came to that particular moment, right? So I came to that moment, I heard him say that, and I was like, wow, that is very jarring, right? So I guess I've gotten further than you did, you know, by that much in the game. And I've also played Vice City, and I wonder, and I'm just throwing it out, of course, because my post on the website dealt with this. I wonder if it's our perception of women versus then versus now. I mean, when we think of prostitution, I mean, that's what they are. The saloon girls versus, the women of the night, whatever you want to call them these days. Do we see that the women that are walking the streets these days share more culpability perhaps than the women back then? I mean, is it our perception of the woman? Is that what make it? Because I've played Vice City, where I've run them over and I've, you know, taken my money back. And, you know, I mean.
I've been thinking about that exact same thing since I heard Sam come into class and tell us about this reaction that she had. And the only thing that I can come to, because I have killed my fair share of hookers in the Grand Theft Auto games too. And I think that the way that Grand Theft Auto was set up is it's made to shock you in the most horrible way it can. So like you're expecting it, mm-hmm. you know that it's going to be over the top, you know it's going to be violent, you know it's going to be misogynist, all these things. But a game like Red Dead Redemption, who makes some other interesting stances about things like Native Americans, yeah. And all of a sudden this sort of peripheral thing happens that's not necessary to the game, that is just sort of on the sidelines. For me, that was what was more disturbing.
Yeah, and it's a side quest, actually. I mean, and I don't know if you, because you've played it, so you've also run into the sheriff, Sarah, where yeah. the sheriff mm-hmm. says, so the sheriff tells you what's going on. This is how you kind of know right. that these outlaws mm-hmm. have come into the city, and they're wrecking all kinds of havoc and stirring up all kinds of shit. And what they're doing is, of course, mm-hmm. Raping the saloon girls, who are, yes, prostitutes. And perfect. it's been said that, well, what you can do is you can protect these women. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, it doesn't say necessarily protect these women, but what you can do is run these outlaws out of town. And, you know, the implication there is that if you run these outlaws out of town, of course, you're also going to protect these women. So, right. you know, and I've thought long and hard about this and wondered if it's perhaps my more protective side that makes me feel like I failed sure. in some way.
That was what I was going to ask. Yeah. Because my most disturbing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By not saving this woman.
Right. Well, I think I was not to interrupt you per se, but I wanted to really agree with you that that's part of what bothered me is that I couldn't get there in time.
Yeah.
And in Grand Theft Auto, I'm the perpetrator.
Right.
And I seem to accept that role. Like, okay, I'm going to boink you in the bushes. I'm going to kill you and take my money back.
Right.
And once I'm resigned to my sort of evil, it seems like I'm okay. Now in Red Dead Redemption, like you said, I mean, we are supposed to be protecting these women, and I couldn't get there in time, just like you.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible feeling. Yeah, a horrible feeling.
And I'm really wondering if that's what it is. I mean, I've had that feeling a lot with games lately, and we'll talk about this, of course, probably in a later episode. But just in terms of my perception of a lot of games where children are involved now, and how that's changed since I myself have become a parent.
Right.
But you know, that's a whole nother episode. I can talk about that for a long time. You don't want to get me started. But okay. So yeah, we've gone off on a tangent there, but so what am I playing? I'm sorry. You know, it's been a crazy week for me. I haven't been playing a whole lot. Okay. Yeah, I have. I haven't been playing a lot of big console games. I've been playing a lot of handheld stuff because I've been so crazy busy. I've been playing, of course, Dragon Quest IX. I feel like I've been playing that game forever. And there's so much more to continue to play. I love that game. It's better than any of the other Dragon Quest games I've played. I've gotten into it in ways that I haven't gotten into the other ones. It feels more like an open world game on the DS. There's so much there in terms of the games, you know, stuff that draws you in, stuff that makes me go, and stuff that makes me think about games, you know, that makes me think about games outside of just having fun with them will draw me in ways that just fun games won't. There's so much stuff in terms of religious imagery, and because of course you play this angel, who has not necessarily fallen, but it seems that all of heaven has fallen, and you don't know why, so you spend a lot of time trying to figure out why, while of course still protecting the folks that you have been a guardian angel for in your kind of past angelic life. It's an awesome game.
Sam, is this the City in the Fog game?
Yeah, the City in the Fog game.
Right. Yeah.
Which one?
Well, didn't you say that there was like some clue? There was a some quest or something that you were supposed to find this.
Yes. This is the City in the Fog game.
Okay.
I was like, City in the Fog game? No, the city itself isn't in the fog. Yes, that's one of the quests when you're going from city to city. You have to find the city, and it's in the fog. And that was one of the things that made it so difficult to find. Yeah, that's the one. And I'm still loving this game. I know I've like talked to folks, read online, that folks have put like 200 hours into this game, like crazy time. And I'm nowhere near there. Simply because I play so many other games, and because I always have my iPhone and my iPad with me, so I'm always playing other little games on that. So those don't, that one doesn't get as much as my time as I would actually like that. And the fact that if I ever take the DS out and we're out and I don't have two of them with me, my daughter immediately takes it away from me and plays something else. So I've been playing a lot of Dragon Quest IX. I finished Oregon Trail on my iPhone. As I was proud to report on Facebook, I only lost one child.
Did they get taken away by the birds? Or?
But did you mean to kill him?
Yeah. He wandered off and never came back. But he was the one. Well, he was the one that kept getting snatched by the birds and getting sick and doing all this other stuff. So I figured, hey, at that point, he was ready to go. That was not my fault. So I've been playing. I played that all the way through. Okay, and I got sucked into Cityville on Facebook. I got sucked into Cityville in a big way. So Facebook games will be the death of me, I swear.
I notice that you come to my city every day and take care of my little town houses for me. So thank you.
Shh, don't tell anybody, Alex.
Well, you'll notice I'm at yours just as often.
Well, the interesting side fact, ladies, I showed my students of primarily males this very week that middle-aged women are supposedly the biggest gamers on social gaming
sites. Right.
Oh, yeah, and sure. That, in fact, it's a $4 billion industry, yeah.
In fact, they're the biggest growing, the most growing group of gamers as well. And women, because of them, have now overtaken the percentage of who plays games, women versus men, correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I believe that.
That's true. I think, and the interesting thing is, I think a lot of that also had to do with handheld games like the DS and iPhone games.
Absolutely.
That, you know, that aren't necessarily social games, but are mobile or portable games that you can take with you, you know, and play it at any given moment. I don't want to essentialize and say women play like games in line at the grocery store or.
Women only play The Sims.
Right. Well, I don't want to make this what my class would talk about, but we did mention, we discussed whether women are more prone to play nonviolent games, or do we play violent games just like the men? I mean, social gaming often is nonviolent.
That's a good question. Social gaming personally like some violence.
Well, it depends, because women are playing a lot of stuff like Mafia Wars.
That's true. All you're doing is killing people on that.
Yeah, I shot somebody in the back to get a deed in Red Dead Redemption, so I couldn't be an example, But
you know what, like, my mom and my sister both were addicted to WoW for years, and play Civ, and they're calling me all the time, like, how do I take over Germany? I can't beat Germany, right? Like, what's happening here? Like, how many ships do I need to kill this, you know? So they might not be bloody games, but they're certainly violent. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think women play a lot, especially if you're thinking about like handheld games. A lot of those are just as violent as console games. Like Grand Theft Auto, Chinatown Wars was kind of the first big adult quote unquote game for the DS, and that it was actually a good game. And I played that a lot. Well, I play a lot of violent games. Violent games don't bother me necessarily, which is why my reaction to Red Dead Redemption was even more strange. Because, they don't bother me generally.
And we played Custer's Last Revenge in your class, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my God, Samantha. That's terrible.
Well, I mean, from historical perspective, actually, I think it was a break. But we weren't playing it for fun.
That one's horrible.
It's awful.
Terrible. I can't even imagine it was made, you know?
Oh, yeah. Mm. There's all kinds of craziness out there, right? So, yeah, that's what I'm playing. And I also played, a few Xbox Live arcade games this week. I played some Limbo. I think I played some Professor Winterbottom. Probably played some Catan. because I'm a huge fan of Settlers of Catan as a board game. And so if I could play, anytime I can play on my Xbox, I'm just as happy.
That reminds me, I need to get that.
Oh, that's awesome. So when
I love Settlers.
See, you get it, we can play. I'm down for that.
Okay, I'm going to get it tonight. Are you doing any Fable 3 yet?
Am I doing any? Oh, I'm always playing. Yeah. Well, I'm always playing Fable 3. You know what? I did play Fable 3 this week, too.
Ah, nice.
I did play Fable 3 this week, too.
Last time I was on, I had overtaken the number of people you kissed, so I was ahead of you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. It took a long time. I probably spent 4 or 5 hours just running around getting people to kiss me.
Well, that's because I've just been running around kissing strange women in bars.
That's right.
A lover, not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know. I've been making as many friends as I can.
That's right. I like getting those gifts, you know?
Of course.
Sorry. I'm not apologizing for it.
Anytime I can walk into town and people are just giving me gifts for nothing, I'm going to kiss strange women in bars if that's what it takes. All right. So now we're going to come up on the next kind of part of our podcast, which is usually going to be what you're reading, which will be interesting to see what we are reading in terms of just kind of fun stuff or even more academic-y stuff that has to do with games or not, just to see what people are doing. And I'll start out this time simply because I want to tell you what I'm reading, and I think I have to finish it tonight. I'm actually reading The Hunger Games.
Me too.
I say I think I have to finish it tonight is because my mother loaned it to me on the Kindle, so it's a Kindle loan.
Oh.
Yeah, which means there's a time period that you have to read it in before it like disappears and you can't access it anymore. So it gives you like 2 weeks. Now, no, it wouldn't take me 2 weeks to read The Hunger Games if I had actually started it when I actually downloaded it.
Is it called the Hunger Games or the Hunter Games?
Hunger.
Hunger, okay.
It's Suzanne Collins, right?
Yeah. So okay. I'm actually reading The Hunger Games. And I am... I don't know how far I'm in on it because I'm looking at it. I'm about 75% of the way through it, so I can finish it tonight, or finish it hopefully, because I think today is my last day before it like disappears and they're gonna make me pay $5. I know $5, woohoo, big deal. But I'm like $5. I'm like 75% of the way through the book.
I have them on loan from Patty, so I can always give them to you.
Oh, see. Yeah, because I'm going to want to read. I'm going to try to see if my mom has the other ones, if she can loan them to me digitally as well. Well, I read
them. Make a joke about you guys kissing, yeah, because you're giving gifts.
Yeah, see? Yeah, kiss my mom and get her to give me books.
That's right.
So I'm reading them on the Kindle, of course. I'm not necessarily reading them on the Kindle. I have a Kindle. But I have the Kindle app on my phone, my iPhone, and on my iPad. So no matter which device I pick up, when I turn it on and hit the little sync button, it goes to the last place I was the last time I was reading it. So
one do you like better to read on?
You know what? I thought the Kindle would be because it's got the digital ink and it is super clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not backlit. So, you know, if I'm like just reading in a regularly lit place, it's fine. But I have to say, I really love reading on my iPad. And I only read on my iPhone when I'm out and about. And I don't, you know, want to take out the big iPad. And if I'm standing in line somewhere and I don't want to pull it out, then yeah, I'll read on my iPhone. Because, you know, you only get like 50 words on a freaking screen if you're reading on the iPhone. But okay, so that's what I'm reading. That and stuff for class, but that doesn't count.
Well, all I have to talk about is stuff from class, so I hope it counts.
Yeah, we do.
You want to go next, Sarah? You can go.
Oh, well, I mean, I think I already tipped my hat. I mean, my students right now are reading, along with them, we're reading a Replay, The History of Video Games by Tristan Donovan.
Yeah.
And which seems pretty comprehensive. He claims that he's giving us more than just the U.S. Development of games. And, you know, at least from what I've, you know, verified from other sources, he's giving us a pretty good, you know, backstory of how they all started. And So that's where my attention has been focused primarily. I've also, of course, been reading our posts on Not Your Mama's Gamer, and learning much from those as well. So other than what I've read for class, and I can't say I've really read it. I mean, I've been paying attention, like you said, to was it Jane McConjugal? McConjugal?
I'd say McGonagall.
I've been, you know, reading stuff from her, her website, and articles that pertain to women in gaming and such like that. So nothing of particular note, I guess. But yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Okay. Well, I liked your shameless plug of our website. But I just ordered a new book yesterday, which I'll get tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. It's Sherry Turkle's new book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology Than Each Other.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
So yeah. I'm so excited for that. So that's what I'm going to be talking about next week. This week I have nothing interesting to talk about. I read Heidegger all week. So I don't think anybody wants me to talk about Heidegger. Well, and I don't want to talk about Heidegger.
Well, you know, reading is sort of, well, read, play. I mean, if you're participating in a narrative, are you reading it? You know, I mean, I've been reading Red Dead Redemption, if you want to go, you know.
Ah, I like that meta.
Certain way, yeah.
Good. Yeah, I've been reading a ton of blogs about academia and women's position in academia. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple interesting ones I ran into that we can post in our link spam. And things about, like, reasons why I left academia or a reason why I'm staying in academia to change it, things like that. So mm-hmm. I've been reading just blog after blog after blog about those types of things, which are just so interesting. You know, to hear people who went through their bachelor's, their master's, and their PhD, graduated, got their diploma, and said, no. You know, I just, it's really interesting. So that's all I'm reading.
Oh wow! I'm really interested to see what you think about Turkle's book. I saw that she was on NPR this week or something talking about that book, wasn't she?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, I think she was on NPR. I didn't get a chance to hear it, but I saw somebody had posted it to Facebook, and it's been such a crazy week that I haven't had a chance to go and look. But I had, like, made a mental note of it, and now that you mentioned it, I make a real note of it, because I'm gonna go back and hear what she has to say, and then maybe I'll pick the book up and see. Maybe I can even get it on my iPad, which would make me very happy.
On your Kindle, yeah.
I tried to get it at the library because I make graduate student salary, but they didn't have it yet. So,
One thing that I was reading, and I noticed that Samantha, you mentioned this about making the Facebook rounds. Of course, we all see the viral, you know, articles that are posted by, like, a bazillion people, and one article that was being passed around was about video game addiction, and I forget the exact statistics. I'd have to go to Facebook to find the article again, but, like, 1 in 10 kids or something is, like, video game addicted, and
I'm rolling my eyes right now, just so you guys know.
I know. The people that were posting it, of a certain generation, and I don't want to get maybe generationalist here, but they were kind of suggesting, oh, technology, all those video games, they're so terrible, they're hurting the kids, you know. And they said that kids in the ages or the grades of 3, 4, 7, and 8 were becoming addicted to video games, playing 31 hours, as much as 31 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
They were blaming video games for these things.
That's tying into Jane McGonagall talks about, right? Like, saving the world through video games. Like, if we could just get people to play video games more, then if we could just get kids to play video games more, then they would be able to accomplish so many more things and so many of these problems that we face.
Yeah.
Well, go. And then Alex, that begs the question. I mean, how do we help prevent addiction versus education? You know what I mean? Like, are we addicting them?
Are we addicted to books? Are we addicted to blogs? Mm-hmm. Are we addicted to going to classes?
But you know, the interesting thing is, and I have to say this, as you know, as a gamer, as a mother, you know, as an educator who's even taught elementary school, you know, all too often, you know, teachers and other educational devices or tools of sort get blamed for a whole lot of things. Sure. Like, you know, they're like, oh, these kids that are you know, so basically 8 to 13, if not younger, are, you know, addicted because they're spending 30, 40 hours a week playing video games. There's no way in hell my kid's going to be playing 30, 40 hours a week of video games. Right. I mean, and I know I say that now. She's 2.5. And she already knows, like, she'll come in and she say, can I watch one Barney? So, you know, and she'll watch one episode of Barney, you know, which is, you know, 25 minutes because we watch it on demand. And she knows that that's it. You know, I mean, in my mind, when we first started out, I said, okay, I'll give her up to an hour of screen time a day. So if she wants to play, she wants to, you know, watch Barney, she can watch, you know, two episodes. But and I always try to make her spread it out. So watch one Barney. And now she's gotten to the point that she'll ask occasionally for one episode of Barney. And that'll be all she watches. And she never even thinks, because she's playing with other things and she's engaging with stuff in other ways. She's got this great wooden train table. She plays with her trains or she plays with her dogs. And she's doing all this other stuff. She never comes back and asks for another episode of Barney. Not that she doesn't. She knows that she can or doesn't know that she can. She never thinks to even do it. I mean, because she's doing other things, or we're reading books together, or we're coloring together. I mean, parents have got to take some of the blame for that.
I think for that, yeah.
Well, if you sense the kid's little, if you can't play because you're working or whatever, you say, okay, my downtime's going to be when you're in front of the TV. You want them to be in front of the TV more and more,
right?
And then that is what the norm is.
Mm-hmm. I just found it interesting that the immediate response, the knee jerk, you know, was, oh, video games are so bad because these kids are being addicted. And like Samantha just pointed out, I mean, there is some parental responsibility. You know, like, I mean, you can decide how much your kid will play. I mean, if you're, as someone, one of my students, we were talking about this article, and my student said, these games aren't cheap, so who's buying it? You know, the kid's not paying for their allowance, you know, to buy these games. So
if my mom let me sit in front of the TV and play video games for 12 hours at a time when I was 8 years old, I would have.
Oh, you know? Totally. Well, and I think it plays into also the thing that was making the rounds on Facebook was the video that we have all seen that talked about the boys and gaming and education.
That's right. I'm in a big argument with a couple of my friends about that right now. I was telling Sarah earlier.
So let's start off by saying this is the Ali Carr Chelman TED Talk about boys and education. That basically talks about gamification and gender, right? And that's a pretty interesting talk, to say the very least. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Alex. Tell us about your fight.
Well, my immediate reaction, I'll just walk you through my reactions because I don't want to say anything that people could tell me was wrong later. So just be honest about my reactions. When I first saw it, I thought I was forced to be kind of self-reflective, because I was thinking, if there was an institution that children were forced to go to, like school, that was all the authority figures were men, all of the teachers were men, and all of these other things, I would be furious that they, like, systemically excluded women from this thing that all children get exposed to. So my first kind of reaction was like, you know, I'm terrified that she's onto something. I feel like there's a lot wrong with her article, and this is where some of the arguments I've been getting into come in, about her essentializing gender, as she points out herself.
Right.
And her way of dealing with it by just assuming, one, that girls don't play video games, it's a boys thing, which it's just wrong. But also that just kind of an uncreative way to look at what's happening, and just thinking that throwing video games in there will get this whole culture of boys who are being excluded from these environments to be participants again. I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it works like that. But I'm pretty terrified that she's onto something about boys being excluded from school. But I guess I don't know any kids in school, so maybe Sam, you could talk to that more.
Well, I think you're right. I think she is onto something, and I think she has a point. Like I said, a point of sorts, right? Because she talks about, how boys are treated in schools and why they act the way that they do and why they get treated in such a way, right? The statistics that she gives, that says like 2.5 more times boys are tracked into special education than girls, you know.
3 out of 4 in the slower programs.
Right. And yeah. twice as many boys as girls are suspended, almost 3 times as many boys as girls are expelled from school completely. And you know what? I think she does have a point that there is something going on, and a lot of it is because of the way boys' behavior gets perceived in schools, right? In places where they're supposed to be kind of, that are structured more rigidly. Right.
Well, she's very concerned with the zero tolerance of right. any perception of violence. Yeah, I mean, yeah. My God, you put a story of something and it's zero tolerance. Right.
But then at the same time, I said, oh, she does admit at the beginning that she does do a bit of essentializing, but this does hold true for some boys, and I think she's right. It does hold true for some boys, but I think the biggest problem is that she's positing this as natural behavior, as innate behavior.
Oh, you're totally right. Mm-hmm.
And she's not looking at the fact that this is learned behavior.
Yeah, there's so many social structures that are already in place before that behavior, before that whole situation even becomes possible.
Right. That, you know, gender is a social construct. We're talking about socialization here. I mean, and it starts early. It starts with the way that we say, the way we raise boys versus the way we raise girls, right?
It goes for the minute you paint the room blue or pink. Right.
Do you make them blue or pink? Do you give them trucks or Barbie dolls? But, you know, don't give them both. Right. Those kinds of crazy things. Right. I mean, so a lot of it is about the way boys are socialized. And rather than saying, OK, let's think about the way that boys are socialized and think about, you know, what's the biggest problem here with, you know, the militaristic toys and the fact that, you know, boys will be boys is what gets thrown around when boys start acting in ways that are inappropriate, right? But girls mm-hmm. can't do those same things.
And I don't know, maybe I misunderstood this, but she seemed to be kind of making the point that we should bring back the boys will be boys,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. And then account for it.
Right, and incorporate the boys will be boys into the institution. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
She claims that she's not essentializing gender, and maybe, you know, Samantha has probably the most ethos on this, you know, because I do not have children, but she seems to be essentializing motherhood. She was trying to be like, well, if you have a boy, you know, they're going to turn in an essay that wants to, you know, blow the house out with a tornado, and that's just boys, you know. And, you know, I've heard my mother speak that way too. She's like, oh, you raise a boy, you raise a girl. Boys suddenly are more interested in trucks sure. than girls, you know, and that kind of like that Samantha, like you said, that they want to claim it is essential. And I've never raised a boy. I don't know that boys are going to have a more, you know, interest in violence. But yeah, I mean, she sort of discounts that by saying, well, if you have boys, you know this. And if you don't, well, you don't understand.
My biggest worry, and maybe the reason why I was quick to defend the video to my friends earlier, is that I totally agree with what you just said, but I worry that that would get in the way of addressing the problem that she's at least trying to address, mm-hmm. even though I think she's doing it wrongly. You know, like, I don't want yeah. the discussion of, like, oh, she's just essentializing what gender is to stop all the facts that she states later
right.
on
oh,
about
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Real problems that are happening.
And I agree.
I mean, she's genuine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What'd you say? 70% of college incoming college freshmen are 70% female. Is that what she was saying?
Yeah, something like that.
It's quite an imbalance. And so she's saying, well, we need to address this just like we did. Although she says, I mean, she does admit that females are still underrepresented in math and science and
yep.
you
and
know, obviously,
and underpaid in the workforce. I mean, she acknowledges all those things.
Right.
Yep.
Right, right. But maybe there is something to paying attention to why boys are not as interested in education as they used to be.
Right. I mean, and I agree that there has to be a way to deal with the current generation. But I think to institutionalize that boys will be boys attitude makes it a bit too comfortable to continue that boys will be boys attitude.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Absolutely.
And it won't
the good old boys club.
Change, right? So, I mean, there has to be some middle ground where we say, okay, let's figure out how to deal with this now. But then let's do something to make some kind of change in the way that children are being socialized. I mean,
right.
And you know, and I have, absolutely. I've been party to raising a boy, and I'm currently raising a girl. And I don't socialize. I try not to socialize my daughter in any of the traditional ways. I don't say, here's a doll, play with that. You know,
gendering.
Here's a truck, play with that. I don't do it. I say, what do you want to play with? I mean, she chooses mm-hmm. her own things. So she likes trains. She likes dolls. She likes trucks. She likes all of these things, and she chooses what she's going to play with at any given point. You know, and it's in, you know, for me being the person I am, at times it's hard for me. and luckily I've got somebody co-parenting with me who says, okay, Sam, back off a little bit, because, you know, when last Christmas came and the question was whether or not she was going to get a kitchen, her own little kitchen to play in, because she likes to come in the kitchen and help mama cook. Right. Whether or not she was going to get her own little kitchen to play in. I was like, my daughter's not getting a kitchen. And then I was like, oh, here we go. Wait a minute. I'm turning the tables the other way. Right. I'm turning the tables the other way. And my partner was like, no, come on now. Back off a little bit. You can't say, no, she can't have a kitchen. That's just as bad as saying, you know, she has to play with Barbies or she can't have trucks. Yeah. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's making, if she identifies with cooking, that's making it a negative thing then.
Right, exactly.
Which it shouldn't be. It's perfectly fine.
It's perfectly fine.
So, you know? I'm wondering, you know, not to get off point, I don't think, I'm trying to circle us back around, but, you know, we did talk about Rockstar and, you know, how we rob prostitutes after we boink them in the bushes, and the whole institutionalization of boys will be boys. Well, I mean, Rockstar seems to revel in that. Right?
Right. Rockstar does. I mean, that's the point, right? That's what happens if we institutionalize it as here's how we deal with boys will be boys, and how we make allowances for it, rather than here's how we change it. Do you understand what I mean?
Right.
I mean, that's when we get these things. I mean, that's when, you know, we get these moments that are more and more violent, that are more and more shocking. Like I said, the shut up bitch before I cut you a new hole was violence in a way that I had never experienced in a game before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, because it was a very explicit kind of violence, right? Because there is, you know, there's a beating, there is a woman screaming, there is helplessness, there's rape, there's a knife involved, so there's penetration of multiple kinds, right? I mean, that took me fast, right? And it hit me in a way that I'd never been hit before. And I think that to continue with that, well, boys will be boys, and that's just what they do, and that's just how they play, kind of thing,
that's dangerous.
Is dangerous and leads to
that. Has dangerous implications. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And the same thing happens. I mean, and I'm not going to say Rockstar is the only company that does this. I mean, even when I play Heavy Rain, right? And I think Alex and I talked about this because I suckered her into playing Heavy Rain and made her lose a weekend of her life.
I still only remember bits and pieces of it. I woke up with like Cheeto stains all over my clothes. I had wrappers just piled up around me and soda. I was like, what just happened? Pretty much.
Right. So, you know, spoiler alert, right? So everybody's playing Heavy Rain by now. If you're not, just like turn your speakers down for a second while I
do. Turn your speakers down.
We need a spoiler alert, Sam.
Spoiler noise, yeah.
So you're playing as I think five, you play as what, five different characters during the course of the game? Is that right? I can't count.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And there's one character you play as, who's an insomniac and has other issues, but that's neither here nor there. But she's in her apartment and she goes in and of course there's a shower scene. There's gratuitous, of course. There's
a shower. But there is a male shower scene.
There's a male shower scene at the beginning. Yes. Her right. shower scene's a little later. So there's a shower scene and, she comes out and she's in like a tank top and panties running around her apartment. And then she gets attacked by men and she's fighting off these men in her apartment. And so she goes through and she's fighting off men. And she finally, if you're successful, fights off all these guys. And then she runs into the bathroom and slams the door. And as she slams the door, she turns around and there's another man there who then grabs her and slits her throat. Mm. Now, yeah.
And you're this character.
There's the helplessness factor.
There's the helplessness factor. Of course, again, there's a knife, right? It's all symbolic. And they're men in your apartment, and you're running around in your underwear.
You're in like a nighty or something.
How do female gamers feel?
Tank top and panties, I think, is what she has.
Is she? Okay.
And then, of course, here's the spoiler again. She wakes up. So it's a dream, right? Which really fucks with your mind in a number of different ways, because for a number of reasons, not only are you going through these violent acts of fighting these men off, and ultimately you lose, and then of course you wake up and it's all a dream, kind of like.
And I don't think there's any way to win, right?
No, I don't think there's any way to win. I've played through that one a couple times, and there's no way to win it, at least that I've found. But you're not sure of what these men want. These are just men in your apartment. And like I said, you're vulnerable. You're helpless. You're running around in a tank top and panties. And you're not sure if this is a robbery. Is this a gang rape? What the fuck is this? So, I mean, you know, as a woman, that's a really hard thing to deal with. I mean, and perhaps I'm getting too sensitive in my old age, but I actually had to shut the game off and go to sleep because it gave me playing that part of the game. Gave me a pounding headache. It was too much.
Here's the big question. I would say in Red Dead Redemption, the expected audience is male. Mm-hmm. Would you say in Heavy Rain that they are targeting particularly male or female as audience? I mean, I think audience sort of dictates. You know, I mean, if it's female gamers, I you know, you wonder what they're up to. If it's male gamers, you also wonder what they're up to. You know, like.
That's true.
What are you trying to do with this?
You know, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, if you're thinking about what people consider hardcore gamers, right, then you're going to say that their audience is always male because they always think of hardcore gamers as being male. I mean, how many times have we had game developers, have we seen them talk to game developers at conferences or had them come and talk to us at our institutions that still say overwhelmingly they see their audience as being males now.
Which is laughable at this point.
18 to 35, yeah. Right? Because the age has gone up, but they still see them as overwhelmingly being male, like 90%+.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a guy who had worked at one of the big companies, we won't say which ones, who came in and told us in no uncertain terms that he told his teams to design as if their audience was 95%+ male.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. And I think the conception of the audience as male goes even further. I was listening to some other Girl Gamer podcast and they're talking about trying to get pre-releases of games so that they can review them on their site. And they say, no, we're not going to give you ones because you're a casual gaming site. And they're like, did you ever consider that maybe our audience doesn't play your games because you won't release the games to us or give us screenshots so that we can talk about, you know?
Or that it's not simply not for us. You know, I mean, like, I'm playing Red Dead Redemption, but I've been acculturated, according to movies and everything else, that the male is always the hero. So I just accept, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's always a big question. What comes first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah,
right.
Sam, since we were on Shock and Awe a few minutes ago, do you want to talk about the Mother video?
Sure. Okay, so the new viral campaign for Dead Space 2. I think if you haven't seen it yet, just like just Google Dead Space 2 on YouTube. It's a viral video where they have interviewed, I want to say, they brought in 200 mothers, they call them.
Well, for market research,
middle-aged women is who they've brought in, and they've shown them the most violent scenes from Dead Space 2, and then recorded their responses to it. And then they've taken the most disgusted ones. They've taken the most disgusted ones, and put them together. They've put them together as an advertisement, right? That, you know, here it is. This game is so disgusting that your mother thinks it's horrible, which means you're going to love it.
And they're like, it's a fact. If mom hates it, it's cool.
Right. Yeah.
I think they almost pretty much come out and say that. And the clips that they show are like you throwing up into a corpse or something like that. Like they said they purposely picked the most grotesque scenes because mothers and middle-aged women being opposed to it is what makes it cool.
That is very telling as well.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yeah,
it certainly is.
I mean,
but I wonder if that's even close to sustainable, though, with the success of all these other games. Like, we were watching Jesse Schell's video about gamification, and he was talking at the beginning about how nobody saw the Facebook games coming. Like, nobody thought that would be as big of it is. The microtransaction, the audience that it reached, all of those types of things. He said, I know there's experts now on the audience here, but I can say from inside the industry, no one saw it happening. And I think that sort of blind spot exists because of that idea that if women or moms don't like it, then it's going to be cool, you know?
It's completely telling. I mean, you know, we were talking about this as well in my class about women gamers, and you know, the average perception of a gamer is what? 15-year-old, pimply-faced, male, not really seeing females very much, eating Doritos.
Rude.
And they're not prepared for the fact that their big audience is soccer moms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Facebook has, what, 500 million people now? And
something like
you
that.
Know, yeah, nobody saw that coming, but...
Well, it's funny because some of the scholarship, like even back into the early 90s, are saying why, like I'm thinking of Purple Moon, you know, type companies are saying, why aren't you, there's this huge untapped audience. Why are you not looking at women? Like if I said to you, you could increase your profits by 200% by making these other types of games, I would think you would want to do that, but nobody did for so long. It's kind of shocking to me.
It is shocking. It shows a very clear oversight and a misunderstanding of games. And even when I was talking to my students, we were talking about digital drag. And you'd be surprised at how many of my male students were, like, shocked that people cross-digitally dressed in the games like a WoW or whatever. And actually, there were a lot of men playing as females and females playing as men. I mean, they just were like, yeah, they acted like as if this was some revelation, and I'm like, no, you know, of course, women are playing on these games, women are participating as males. I mean, you don't know how many females actually are out there.
Absolutely. Which is one of the reasons I kind of liked the new Black Ops commercial. I don't know if you guys saw that one. Well, I guess it's not new anymore.
Oh, the one with Kobe Bryant? Hey, guys, talk among yourselves for a second. I gotta run off for a second. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay. Talk amongst ourselves.
Did you see that the Black Ops commercial?
I did not. I did not.
So they have so imagine like the typical. You played a little bit of Black Ops, right?
I've seen Black Ops play it. I didn't actually participate, but I've seen it. Yeah.
So they had the commercial. Imagine like the war scene, right? And they're running around. Oh, that's right. You did your thing on Nuketown.
Yeah.
And instead of having the soldiers, they have like a mom. They have a really tall African-American guy. They have a young, overweight woman. They have like all these different like real looking people running around, and they're shooting the guns, and they're taking down the helicopters, and they're slicing people's throats and stuff. And I just thought it was so cool because it really, it was like a nice nod, like an acknowledgement that like we recognize, even though the avatars all look the same.
Exactly.
Like, we recognize that there's other people behind them.
We're looking behind the avatars. Right. You know, and we brought up Laura Croft, which you get to go on forever, you know.
Of course.
And why she was so popular and everything else. But, well, I had some males in the class even admit they had participated in WoW or, you know, RPG games, saying, well, I have been females before because people are more apt to give you gifts.
But, you know what's so funny? Like, as much as I want to say something like, what a bunch of jerks, it's so true. But at the same time, you get so much harassment and so much, like there's an inherent fear when you're actually a female playing that I don't think males experience of, like, talking on the VoIPs, you know?
Yeah.
Which means you can't necessarily participate in the hardcore raids or whatever. Or like Sam would talk about, if Sam was here, I'm going to channel her, about when VoIPs first became popular, the voice changing technology became huge because women wanted to play, but they didn't want to be called out as women because then it'd be all, you know, people harassing them for
the stigma. Yeah.
Right. So they had to have voice changers so that they could participate.
That is fascinating. I mean, you know, one of my students is a psychology major, and she was going to write about, you know, being, you know, transvestism, or I can't even pronounce it, transvestism, I don't know. And I said, well, you should take a look at digital drag, because it happens more often than you think, where people will participate in a gaming community in the opposite gender.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what that really means. I mean, that goes back to our discussion about boys and gaming, you know, like boys, girls, you know.
Well, it sort of calls into question, like Sam was saying, that whole social construct of gender.
Exactly.
It really calls, when you could choose to be anything, and I use anything like with huge scare quotes around it, because I know it's a drop-down menu that some programmer came up with. But when you could be theoretically anything, then it's sort of like, you get to construct your identity, but do you really, like, are you so entrenched already in that social construct? Can you
escape?
Exactly.
Well, and one of the big issues we talked about in class was control, that game,
which naturally comes up with Laura Croft, of course.
Well, I asked one of my male friends, I'm like, what was the appeal of playing as Laura Croft? He's like, well, because I could control her and make her do what I wanted. And
This should be a shout out to our listeners quick. If you haven't checked out the video on our website, nymgamer.com, you should. There's a video called Cyber Bimbo, and it's all about Laura Croft and the issues that go around with that. And a lot of it does talk about like being able to control her, but it was the first time women were represented, so it was kind of like a double-edged sword. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like your point about the double-edged sword. I mean, I think... I don't know. I mean, we can talk forever about gender. You, me, Samantha. We of course, you know, we're in academia.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have biological, and then you have, you know, psychological, and then you have cultural, you know. But I do think it's interesting that people are essentially cross-dressing in a digital space.
Have you seen, I posted on my Facebook, it was a graph of how to construct video game avatars.
I don't think I did. No,
okay,
so
it was this chart, and I'm pulling it up here. Okay, so it says how video game makers design characters, and then the first thing is gender, and then female, and then male. So male goes to more brackets, and it says shooter, RPG, adventure, and then it goes to more brackets, protagonist, villain, all these kinds of thing, and then it goes on like shirtless, alien, etc., etc. And the female, like, so there's all these different subcategories, and then it's in the gender female line goes this pink line all the way to the bottom, and it just says boobs in huge letters with a box around it.
Okay, I have to tell you guys, I'm back, and I'm really thinking this is hilarious, because I came back at the point where Alex started channeling me, and I was like, oh, she's doing a good job. I don't have to talk. She can just be me.
Sam, you think I don't listen to you when you talk, and I am listening and making mental notes all the time.
You should all become disciples, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have it up now, Alex. I see what you're talking about.
Okay, so I'll put that in the link spam.
Yeah, just boobs. Just boobs. It's all it says for female. Boobs.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, I don't know if they meant it to be as pointed as they did. I have no idea what their intention was, but it, to me it was sort of you know, you put some time and thought into how you cast these male characters, and you don't as much for females. So back to the Lara Croft thing.
The jiggle mechanics, right?
I mean,
it's like any of the fighter games. Like, you know, interestingly enough, with the price point and the release date and the launch games being announced for the Nintendo 3DS this week, right? Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, mm-hmm. one of the things I thought was like one of the games that's a launch game is Dead or Alive 3DS. I was like, ooh, now I get to see jiggly boobs not only because, you know, with the PlayStation 3, you get to see, you know, high def jiggly boobs. Now you get to see 3D jiggly boobs.
Oh, and do we really need 3D? I don't know.
Yeah, do I really need 3D is one thing, but do I need 3D jiggly boobs is a whole nother thing.
That is a whole nother podcast.
I know some people who would say yes. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how far to get into the 3DS. I know that was something that we had considered as well.
I feel like I should say something there because that was a long time that no one was talking.
That was a long time.
I don't know.
You know, well,
she can edit.
Maybe our discussion of the 3DS, because that's gonna be another big one. Is a discussion for another day in its entirety. But I have to say, okay, I looked at the release games for the 3DS. And I was debating whether or not I was going to, because, you know, like GameStop's already taken pre-orders for it.
It's expensive.
It's $249.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's
worth it on Xbox.
I read some speculation about why they're rolling it out before it's ready. And also they're charging so much when Nintendo usually doesn't.
$80 more than the system usually is, right?
Right.
Than the DS usually is. And I was looking and a lot of them are just the games are rehashes.
You know? Oh, that's too bad.
Well, because there's like what's coming out? Super Street Fighter 4 3D edition, Nintendo Dogs and Cats. Steel Diver, which is a new game. So that's not a rehash. The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time 3D, Madden NFL Football, Dead or Alive Dimensions, which is Dead or Alive 3D, Star Fox 64 3D, Ridge Racer 3D, and then the one that I was really excited for, I thought might be pretty interesting, was the Resident Evil, the 3D Resident Evil, which, right. According to the site, is they've just taken levels from Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5 and put them together and called it Resident Evil The Mercenaries 3D.
No!
But what is our fascination with 3D? Is it our sort of embryonic virtual reality? I mean, is that what 3D is? Is that the fascination that we're sort of on the cusp of becoming sort of
I think it's
immersed?
A money-making thing. Especially with the TVs and then the movies that came out. They're trying to sell new, more expensive hardware. Now that might be my cynical side. So.
Well, that's the rationale on the side of the producers of the technology. But what about the consumers? Why do consumers want 3D? Right? Do we want to be more and more virtual beings? Right? Do we? Want,
I do. I think we do. Yeah.
We
I mean,
to, we go, we
between
go
Kinect
to the tech more.
Once we have Kinect married to 3D. We will have virtual reality, will we not?
That's that's a good question. It's a good question. I mean,
that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And see, that's another discussion. That's another discussion to have. Maybe we'll have that discussion. Maybe that'll be we'll talk about that next week when we start talking about if we talk about the 3DS and 3D technology. But yeah. I got a Kinect for Christmas, and I have played it. Like in the store before Christmas, Everything's on semesters for me. I was like, last semester. And
yeah, no, too. I do that too.
And one of the things about it is that I felt more disconnected than less playing some of the games, like the bowling game. I was bowling with no ball. You know, you can't even fake it and say, okay, this controller is like the ball. No, there's nothing. So it was a very strange, even more disconnected feeling for me playing the bowling game, I think, at first than anything else. I won't tell you whether or not I still feel that way until we talk about it more.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's fascinating, the irony of the Kinect makes you feel disconnected from your corporeality. You know what I mean? Like, it's fascinating.
Well, there's nothing tactile. It totally takes out touch, yeah. Right?
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Should we do buys of the week quick?
Okay, let's do buys of the week quick.
We've just been talking and talking.
I know, we have been. Okay, so, you know, I've seen on different places that people always, you know, say, you know, here are games for cheap ass gamers, right? And I was like, okay, so, you know, we're talking academics and grad students. How about games for broke ass gamers?
That's right.
We're in the humanities.
That says it all. Yeah,
it really does.
So I'll tell you what I found this week, and anybody can tell you guys can tell me if you found anything else in terms of good deals, right? I still love my old school games, and Good Old Games this week has the Zork Anthology, all the Zork games for $5.99. That's a way to lose a good part of your week, right? Is to play some Zork. And then I was like really excited when I was actually looking for books. Amazon had a buy two get one free on games. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I thought at first it was gonna be crappy games, like old stuff, but it's they've got a pretty good selection. It looks like just about everything. Little Big Planet, if you want to play Red Dead Redemption, that was on there.
The Mass Effect 2, which was the game of the year, right?
Mass Effect 2, yep. Heavy Rain was there. A bunch of Kinect games were there. DC Universe Online, which just came out, was there. So did Little Big Planet 2. I mean, those just came out, this week? And they're already there on the buy two, get one free. Interestingly enough, Best Buy has the same deal going as Amazon with the buy two, get one free on all their games over $29.99. So if you need some games.
I do need some games. That sounds like a good deal.
Now is the time to buy them.
I like that. Broke-ass gamers.
Broke-ass gamers.
Yeah. I don't have any good buys. I'm sorry.
I spent all my time looking up yours, so.
That's okay. That's what I'm here for.
You're our leader on that.
What's the Steam deal this week?
You know, the Steam deal wasn't too great this week.
I remember looking at it and not being too excited. I'm going to bring it up here.
It was something, but it ends tonight, which is one of the reasons I didn't even mention.
Oh, it was 66% off Dead Space.
Yeah, and it ends tonight, right? Or something like that?
It ends Monday.
Okay, so the one that ended tonight probably already ended since it's like 11:30 Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
And then, you know what? Toys R Us has another sale this weekend, too, like that's good through Saturday. I don't know if the show's going to be up and posted by Saturday, but if it is, now you'll
know. Well, it's not like you have other things to do, Sam. I'm sure you can get it edited by then.
I can get it edited. No,
yeah, aren't you Superwoman?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, clearly. Clearly. If you buy Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, you get 50% off of any other game you buy.
Toys R Us?
Toys R Us. So if Assassin's Creed was on your wish list and you got a few extra bucks, then you can run out and get that and something else.
Well, I mean, Samantha, I still have it in my email and I fully intend to do it. You put me onto that gaming site. What is it called again?
Oh, the game rental services. There's a million of them, right? There's like I've used other ones, but the one that seems to mail quickest to me, probably because of proximity, is GameFly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like, and I've used like Games and Flicks before. I don't even know if that one's still around, but there's a lot of them usually. Or those are the ones that I've used.
The big ones.
Yeah, the big ones.
No, I had never heard of it, so I was completely enthralled. I didn't know there was like a gaming Netflix, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's a little expensive, I think, but Yeah. It's what, $15 a month?
Yeah, for one game, mm-hmm. out at a time.
Games are so high priced, really. I mean, they make more money than movies in a lot of cases, but they also make you pay.
That's true. I'm not saying that I didn't think it was fair. It's just a lot of money for me. That's like a hundredth of my salary a month.
I make more than I do, yeah. Absolutely.
We've been talking for a while. So
we have. Probably about an hour and a half here, I think.
Yeah. Well,
at least we know that how much we have to plan. We have stuff to talk about next week because we didn't get to all the stuff.
We still have stuff. Yeah, we're not even done. Yeah.
So I think next week folks can plan on hearing us talk about the Nintendo 3DS and probably the Kinect as well as some other things that we come up between now and then and any kind of important news or things that we come across in the week that plans.
We could totally market this like they do on the major networks, 3DS, and it's dangerous.
That's right. We can just make everything come to
work. Next one, not your mom's
gamer. You can't show this to your kids.
Your child turn their eyes out.
Why, everybody in your house is going to die tomorrow if you don't listen to our podcast.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. So once again, thanks to folks for listening to our inaugural episode. This is Samantha and...
Alex
and Sarah. And Sarah.
Thanks for listening. And we hope you come back and listen to the next episode. Have a great night.